Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-800-259-5791 or here. And but right now, please hold your calls, because we have with us Colonel Ron Ray. He's retired, a Marine Corps general, and we're going to be talking today about the effort to homosexualize the American military. Colonel Ray, thank you so much for being with us.
Stan, it's good to be with you.
Why don't you explain to our listeners what's really going on and the demoralizing effect of accepting homosexuality and putting homosexuals into key administrative and command positions?
Well, let's go back a little bit and talk about the homosexual agenda. As of course, you know from the foundation that Carol Reese got into years ago in 1953 and 54, that the social science was being targeted at a transformation of our military, and that was a point that he picked up on. And Harry Hay used the Kinsey reports to start the first homosexual political movement, the Mattachine Society, in the United States in the late 1940s. But in 1972, in Chicago, there was a political convention, a national political convention of over 200 homosexual political organizations from across the country, and they adopted their movement. They called it Gay Liberation, and they had a platform with nine specific demands for radical change in the American way of life, nine targeted at the federal government level and eight demands at the state and local level. And their second on their agenda for the national level was to permit homosexuality, advance the notion of homosexuality in the military and permit open homosexuals to serve in the armed forces. Everybody remembers as Bill Clinton's first major political move in 1993, and there was every conservative group in the country was alert, alive, and the book I brought out in December of 92 was widely made available to the leaders in the armed forces. But I think people have gone to sleep during the Republican administration in many ways, and here we are at a time of a national security crisis, continued threats at home, and overstretched military abroad. And last June, the Supreme Court decided the case of Lawrence versus Texas, but well before that, which overturned a Texas sodomy statute and overturned a 1986 case, the Supreme Court, in which they'd upheld the Georgia sodomy statute, and it was a reversal of the Supreme Court's position about the efficacy and viability of sodomy statutes. And, of course, the military still has crimes of sodomy, fornication, adultery, what have you, are still crimes under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Well, what's been going on is that after the 93 Don't Ask, Don't Tell compromise in July of 1993, the services were still upholding their exemplary conduct standard. But the political revolutionaries, the homosexual political revolutionaries, continued to work through the Clinton years and be prepared. And months before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and months before Lawrence versus Texas, they renewed their plans and strategies for undermining the military in a time of war.
And, of course, this really can have disastrous effects upon the morale of our fighting men. But the average individual doesn't understand that the military doesn't hold the same rules that hold in civilian population. The important thing is that you have an effective organization that can win wars. And if you're going to demoralize the morale by putting homosexuals into command positions, why, that military organization isn't going to work very well, will they?
No, not at all. In fact, it's a separate society. We have three separate societies in America, and after the break, we'll talk about that.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views and the views of our guests. Well, today we have with us Colonel Ron Ray. He's a retired Marine Corps colonel. We're talking about the effort to homosexualize the military. And what most people don't understand is that they have today in the Defense Department a homosexual who is really picking the key people within our military, almost like the Bush administration is intent upon homosexualizing the military. And that's very difficult to understand when we have a Christian administration. So you pick up the story there, Colonel.
Well, that yes, I would. I'd mention that's just one of the indicators. Lawrence versus Texas, the Bush administration, the most important case than Roe versus Wade, some said Brown versus Board of Education, a revolutionary case in terms of undermining the virtue and morality, which, remember, George Washington's farewell address, he said, if we would enjoy political prosperity in America, most famous political speech in the history of the country, he said there were two indispensable sports: religion, which was defined in the Noah Webster's dictionary as Christianity, and morality. Religion and morality, and morality was at the core of the very first principle of the American military. Washington wrote it for the Continental Army in 1775, and John Adams for the Continental Navy, that we would guard against and suppress immoral and dissolute behavior for the welfare of those in our military, both Navy and Army, and we have still got those first principles intact in the military institution. Before I get to the current Pentagon, let me take you back to something that you've heard me refer to in other times. I was a presidential commissioner on the assignment, the presidential commission in 1992, brought about by President George Herbert Walker Bush to look at the proper role and assignment of women in our armed forces. Very contentious, following the tailhook attack on the Navy in 1971, the feminist assault on the military. It goes all the way back to the Ford administration when Gerald Ford, under the advice of Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense, and Steve Herbert was the fellow that was making all the personnel decisions. Was a homosexual activist in the Pentagon.
Hold that thought for just a moment, please.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking, Colonel Ray was talking about when he was on a presidential commission that had been established by George Herbert Walker Bush, and they were, of course, looking into the background of putting women into the military, and you were commenting, Colonel, that it was at that time that there was a homosexual in a key position in the Defense Department?
Yes, working for Dick Cheney, but he'd been there in the Ford administration. But the wake up call for me was the testimony of a former communist revolutionary. At least he says he's a former communist revolutionary. David Horowitz was a witness in Los Angeles in August of 1992. Room was full of media figures. A lot of attention paid to the commission's hearings in 92. Very anticipated that this had. This commission would put women in combat aircraft, combat ships, and ground combat. That was the goal, and a lot of pressure was being brought to bear. Horowitz basically testified that he was raised in the home of where his mother and father were dedicated Bolsheviks, dedicated to the overthrow and subversion of our country, and that one of their objectives was to undermine the armed forces. He said by the late 60s, they had achieved their objective in all of our institutions but the military, and they were in their meetings in the late 1960s, in which he named some names of very powerful people at the time, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee and the chairman of the Personnel Subcommittee of the House of Representatives were named as involved in this the conspiracy. And they were going to undermine the military by advancing women in combat and promoting homosexuality in the armed forces.
And so they felt that if they could get women into the military and they could get homosexuals into the military, they would then be able to undermine our military and destroy it as they had so many of our other institutions. Is that right?
That's exactly right, and something that's very subtle here. Obviously, the breakdown of you put men and women in close quarters together, and with the laws of nature, not the laws of God, the laws of nature, human nature being what it is, you'll get that. You put boys and girls together in a co-ed dorm, you're going to get a lot of unacademic behavior, and if you put young men and women together in close quarters in the military, you're going to get a lot of unmilitary behavior, as we've experienced over the last 25 or so years. But when I realized that what Horowitz was saying was, and nobody challenged what he said. There was no witness. We had 375 witnesses. Not a single witness challenged what he said. And I realized that this agenda was had a lot of support inside a conservative administration like the Bush administration. And I realized it went back to Ford. It went even back to Eleanor Roosevelt, who had the idea that this should be promoted. And she helped George Marshall, when he was Secretary of Defense, create the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services in 1952, I believe, 1952, when Truman was still President of the United States. And they became a feminist activist group inside the Pentagon. And you have people on the outside like the Lambda Legal Defense Fund, the ACLU. You've got the Servicemen's Legal Defense Network. You've got many of these groups that have well-funded groups that are advancing these radical agendas. And then they have folks in the administration, whether they're Republican or Democrat, that are favorably advancing these causes within. And what's happened in 1993 is that all, I'm sorry, in 2003, 10 years later, these groups have refunded, reformulated, and have begun before Lawrence versus Texas. They anticipated a radical decision in the Supreme Court. They knew the Bush administration would not file a brief, and they began to organize themselves and began the drumbeat in the media. As soon as Lawrence came down, the Washington Post had a headline very soon thereafter, you know, calling for an overturning of Don't Ask, Don't Tell on the basis of Lawrence. In other words, apply the Lawrence case against the military, which still has its sodomy laws, and the Don't Ask, Don't Tell statute, and never mentioning what I said just before the last break, that in America there are three separate societies governed by their own rules and regulations. The largest society, civil society, has, of course, the laws of the 50 states. Then you have the military, a separate society governed by its own laws and regulations. Then you have those in prison, which is the most restricted way of life. But when you go in the military, you put a lot of your rights and the individuality, what's best for you goes down and what's best for the military mission goes up. And we've always had very, very high standards of virtue, honor, patriotism. We've had uniformity, subordination. You subordinate your interests for the good of the service. People lay down their lives for their soldiers, for their country to accomplish the mission. Our history is replete with that going all the way back for hundreds and hundreds of years. And all of that seems to be in grave jeopardy, and you're not seeing much about it among conservatives. There's a lot of issues, of course, to be concerned about, national security issues, issues of liberty, the Bill of Rights. But here, the last American institution with its founding principles still intact is about to be undermined over the next, I think, 12 months. And I don't think whoever wins in November, I think we're likely to see a change in the standards unless the American people wake up, and unless the veterans groups speak out, and unless we can get a hold of some congressmen and senators who will lead this charge on Capitol Hill.
Well, this is a little off the subject, but I know that after David Horowitz, who was a red diaper baby, had given his testimony before this a presidential commission, of which you were a member, you took him aside and you asked him, but what about the church? What about our religious institutions? You said you had effectively destroyed all of the basic foundational institutions of America. Just comment on that briefly. I don't want to get off on that subject, but I wanted our listeners to hear what David Horowitz's reply was to you when you asked him that question.
Yeah, the former statement he made on the record and what he said to me was private. I came up and introduced myself to him, and we began to talk, and he said, yeah, I said, you know, you said you've undermined and subverted all of our institutions, but the military. Tell me about the churches and the seminaries, the religious institutions. And he smiled a kind of a wolfish grin, and he basically suggested that we got them first, and they were the easiest for us to undermine.
And how did they do that?
Well, a lot of ways, and that's almost deserves a separate show, but I can say that it was very clear that they began to affect the seminaries. In fact, the early part of the 20th century, there was a phenomenon called all of a sudden there were Bible colleges that began to spring up, because there were the mainline denominational seminaries were beginning to be altered with modernism, ecumenism, getting away from the inerrancy of the Bible as they became focused on theology and what have you, and you began to see, if you will, more and more liberal theologians being promoted by publishing companies and all that, and you got commentaries on the Bible. You got changes in the way, the Roman Catholic Church began to be attacked from within after Pope Leo the 23rd denounced Freemasonry. I think in the 1880s there was an effort there to infiltrate the Catholic Church, which worked its way out in the 60s in terms of Vatican II. But I think what's important to say is that the seminaries first, the large denominations. I mean, now we're debating some of the most conservative, formerly conservative, one-time conservative, solid churches, the Methodist churches, if you will, are debating ordination of homosexual pastors.
Okay, fine. I don't want to get off too far on that, but one of the things that they did, David Horowitz did say, was they wanted to teach in the seminaries that the minister had no obligation of winning souls, and he wasn't to be concerned about anything else. Wasn't that one of the points he made?
One of the points that came out, if you read some of the Masonic publications in the 1920s, they encouraged members to become... get involved in the local churches, get on the board of elders, get on the board of deacons, and to encourage the church growth movement. In other words, the idea we should concentrate only on soul winning and get out of social action. Don't be salt and light in all of our institutions. Don't disciple people and to participate in government and involved in politics. They began to say our mission is the Great Commission, and your job is soul winning. And what the church began to do is turn inward. You got an evangelist movement that in a way promoted church membership, and if you look at from the 20s to the last 80 years, during the time when America's institutions have been undermined and our way of life has been radically altered, as people like Carol Reese and others in official positions have disclosed to us, but the church growth movement, we've seen churches prosper as they withdrew from their formerly active influence in our society. Remember, George Washington said, we can only have political prosperity in America if we have the two indispensable supports. Religion, Christianity must be vibrant. You know, we must, every calling, all the gifts differing from 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 28, including the gift of governments, those that bear the sword, in the justice system, legal system, judiciary, in politics, the military, police, FBI, that it's very important, and they have to be trained in that way, and they need to be mature men who complete, with a real sense of self-government and self-discipline. Where are they going to get that? They get that at home. They get that in the church. It needs to be taught. And the church's role was to find them, bring them in, see that they're converted, see that they're instructed, and send them out again. And somebody said once that the job of the local church, certainly in America in many places, is to equip the saints and send them out.
Well, now, of course, when we get into the issue of homosexuality, this is a direct affront to God. It's an affront to the Scriptures, and they keep trying to tell us, well, really, this is not what the Scriptures said. What about Jonathan and David? Weren't they homosexuals? There have even been those who try to suggest maybe perhaps Jesus, since he was never married, was a homosexual. They're doing everything they can to undermine the homosexuals, everything to undermine the faith in Christianity, aren't they?
Well, there's no question about it, and there have been outrageous things have been said, like you just gave some of the more, that Lincoln and his good friend, because they, in those days, in the 1850s and 1840s, that the men were traveling together, there weren't Holiday Inns and motels along the way.
Hold that thought right there.
Yes, sir.
that will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tierney. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to mention the fact we sell Miracle 2 soap products, and we can't make any medical claims for them. We can just tell you that a lot of the people who use them tell us how great they are and how they've helped their rashes and their acne and the upper and lower gastrointestinal tract problems, and they make a lot of claims that I don't know whether they're anything valid or not, but I will tell you that the people who use these products love them. I know my wife, I use the gel on just about everything, aches and pains and burns and tennis elbow, and all that we can do is suggest if you'd like to try them, there's a soap, a moisturizing soap, which I use, a gel, which I use and put on my hair to keep it in place during the day, a lotion, and the neutralizing solution, which is a very alkaline solution. Well, if you'd like to get the introductory offer at a reduced price, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and call right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Colonel Ron Ray, a retired Marine Corps general. Retired Marine Corps colonel, and we're talking about the effort to homosexualize the military, and they're really going after the military right now, aren't they? While our attention is diverted elsewhere.
Yes, there's no question about it. I've been watching the renewed efforts going all the way back to April of this year, April of last year. In other words, about a year ago now, the Service Members Legal Defense Network announced an annual legislative training and education event aimed at repealing the military's gay ban. That was written up in the gay press. The Center for the Study of Sexual Minorities in the Military at the University of California has called for gay and lesbian UK service members to contact them. In other words, Britain, after a lot of pressure for a decade, Britain has permitted open homosexual members to serve in their armed forces in 1999, and of course we're hearing a lot of calls for, since the British troops are doing so well in combat in Iraq and elsewhere, that we need, that's another reason why we need to lift the ban. And there's been a certain number of press accounts, and there's a director of Senate Studies, the Servicemen's Legal Defense Network, has been putting out information. There are websites that let you follow what they're doing. Most disturbing is about 5 sodomy convictions contained obtained in military courts have been sent back for rehearing in light after the Lawrence decision last June. Now, Lawrence had nothing to do with the military. And the doctrine of military necessity or judicial deference, the one area of the Supreme Court of our American life that the Supreme Court has not entered itself into, has been the conduct of our armed forces, the readiness, the what we need to equip, train, select, promote, and handle our national security mission, or as the Constitution says, to provide for our common defense. It's the one area that they're least qualified to be a part of, and to this day there's been no Supreme Court decision. There have been lower court decisions, but the last I was involved in Stephan versus Perry, a case that went on for 5 years during the Bush and then during the Clinton administration to put homosexualize the U.S. Naval Academy. It was one of those cases they had selected out of 154 cases. When I began to write my book in 1992, by the grace of God, saw this was coming up in 1993 and pulled together a lot of research that I had developed over the years in several cases. There was a war room set up with 154 cases against the military being tracked by lawyers, well-paid people like David Geffen, the Hollywood movie maker who made millions, if not billions, in the music business as a partner with Steven Spielberg in the DreamWorks. Gave millions of dollars to this effort back in 1991, 92, 93, and would do that again. So they're well funded. They've got all the lawyers that they need, and they were tracking 154 cases. And I went around to basically every Christian conservative legal group in the country and said, they got a war room, they've got an objective, they're funded, and they're going after our military institution. Don't you think we need to do something similar to at least offset that, so that we file friend of the court briefs, be sure that the lawyers handling the case for the government are doing the best job possible? And I couldn't find a single group that would put that kind of, or a coalition of groups that would put that kind of effort into it. But we did participate in Stephan versus Perry and filed the decisive brief in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. And one of the most interesting things about Stephan versus Perry, it was a win in the second highest court in the land, 8-3. They held that you can't separate orientation from behavior. Let me say that again. They held as a matter of law that you can't separate orientation from behavior.
And in other words, if you're a homosexual, you're going to be involved in this in the military and use your authority, because this sexual obsession, this is what the problem with it is.
Well, it's like I said to the court in the brief, I said, if a man keeps telling you he's a golfer, you can presume he owns clubs and plays. And it was one of the strategies of this the legal network was to separate orientation from behavior. In other words, that you, if you don't catch a person in the act, then just because you learn that they're homosexual, you can't presume that they would act on their orientation. But the Stephan case, which our side doesn't really know occurred, the other side knows it occurred, and they've downplayed it enormously, gives us a very strong hand the next round. But I'm afraid the senior military leadership and the senior Pentagon leadership in the Bush administration don't take this threat seriously, and I can find very few, if any, making the kind of preparations one would take if this kind of sneak attack on our founding principles of the military is underway without anybody. They seem to be as asleep at the switch as they were on September the 11th, 2001.
Hold that thought right there.
most people would laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course I want to mention to you that we carry the Big Berkey and the Berkey Life water filters, and they're really great. You can filter water from a pool or from a pond or from a river or from a lake, and it's potable. The Big Berkey's been used by missionaries for, 150 years or more, and it's made out of stainless steel, and you put a couple of gallons in the top. It goes down through the ceramic filters that are packed with activated carbon. It comes out the bottom, and it's potable drinking water. Now, it'll take out just about everything you need to, except for arsenic, lead, and fluoride. And if you want to, there's special filters that you can get for the Big Berkey, and that'll take it out. The Big Berkey, however, is $279 now, and it's available in every state in the Union except California and Iowa. However, if you live in California, you can get the Berkey Light. And the Berkey Light is a exactly the same design, the same size. We measured it the other day, and it's 33 inches tall. And, the Big Berkey would be about 30 inches tall. The Berkey Light's 33 inches tall. It's made of Lexan, which is transparent, which you make bulletproof glass out of, so you can actually see the water level, which I think is an additional benefit. It has two black Berkey filters, and they really purify the water. They do even a better job than the traditional Big Berkey, but the Berkey Light filters have to be replaced every 2 to 3 years, depending upon how much you use them. You can get post filters for that to take out the fluoride as well, and it's only $199. Now, there's $10 shipping charge for both items. If you buy either item from us, you get a four-tape set or a video we produced. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and order a Big Berkey or a Berkey Light. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Colonel Ron Ray, and we're talking about the effort to homosexualize and undermine and demoralize our military. You know, back when the Clinton came into office back in 1993, one of the things that your book, I'm sure, had a tremendous impact at that time, but there's also a video that was put out. It was called The Gay Agenda. I don't know whether you remember that, Colonel, but video had a tremendous impact. Somebody bought copies and gave it to every members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Every Marine Corps general was given a copy, and they went to the president and said, "We don't care what you say. We're not going to allow your homosexualization of the military." Maybe it's time we got some more copies of that video and got them out to the new crop of people there who probably don't understand what happens when you get to be a homosexual. You die younger. The average homosexual dies at 41 or 42. And the diseases that they have that are communicable to other people, the HIV disease, we've lost almost 600,000 people in America today, and almost half of those are homosexuals. Don't tell me there's no harm in being a homosexual. When we accept something that God says is wrong, we're laying ourselves open for real problems. But what we're doing is allowing them to recruit other people into this death style, because that's really what it is. And when we say, as a society, there's nothing wrong with it, we not only are lying to the people, but we're flaunting God.
Well, let me say this. A lot's happened since 1993 in the last 11 years. And if I could, a lot of your listeners probably have Renee Wormser's outstanding book about the Reese Committee hearings in 53 and 54 in the 83rd Congress. One of those hearings, if they have the book, and if they don't, they should get a hold of it from Radio Liberty. But on pages 105 to 110, It deals with the use of social science to sabotage the structure of our military services. And these developments that have occurred were used to overturn Bowers versus Hardwick, which was based on solid law and history. And if you read the Lawrence versus Texas case very carefully, they're basically saying that we've evolved and transformed and changed America. We've changed dramatically, and that the historical precedents that were undergird the 1986 Bowers case no longer bind the court in 2003. So, sadly, a lot of the materials, if I have the wherewithal, I'm hoping to perhaps put out a third edition of Military Necessity and Homosexuality and see that it gets distributed to the military leadership, because under the Military Necessity Doctrine, the Supreme Court will not interfere with the considered professional judgment of our military leaders. What they say is necessary to recruit, the standards that should apply for combat readiness, and I think it would be a very compelling case in time of war. But I was stunned that after September the 11th, the revolutionary forces going after prayer in the armed forces would continue pursuing their case against VMI and the attack on the Citadel and the Naval Academy, even after September the 11th. So these revolutionaries kind of reveal, if you will, the part of the hidden agenda that these overseas wars have been used to transform and make radical changes in our way of life here in America.
Well, you know, most people cannot imagine America being destroyed, but they've forgotten that Babylon, the mighty city in all of the Middle East, several thousand years ago, over 2,000 years ago, was destroyed in one day. Rome fell in a day. And America is following the pattern of both of those great nations. And we've lost our vision, and we've certainly lost our belief in God and what's right and wrong. We've allowed a small group of people who hate America to undermine the very foundations of our society, the family, the very foundations which once made us the envy of the entire world.
Well, think about July the 9th, 1776, 5 days after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. George Washington recorded in his orderly book, which is still available, which is still a matter of historic interest to those. This is what he wrote on that day, 5 days after declaring our independence. The blessings and protection of heaven are at all times necessary, but especially so in times of public distress and danger. The general hopes and trusts that every officer and man will endeavor to live and act as becomes a Christian soldier, defending the dearest rights and liberties of his country. We've come a long way from that, and I want you to know, Stan, that one of the things that was intended by feminizing the force with the 1976 decision by Gerald Ford, when, remember, Dick Cheney was his chief of staff, and the Secretary of Defense was Donald Rumsfeld, and one of the key advisors to Donald Rumsfeld was Steve Herbert, who was giving him personnel advice about who got a political appointment in our Pentagon. That was 76, and even though it was against the law, I guess it was appealed to Ford and others that this was a way to deal with the Republican gender gap. So they ordered women into the service academies at a time when it was against the law. And the service chiefs could have and should have stood up, but they acquiesced, and they began to put women in the military. And now we've had almost 30 years of women in the military. We have women in combat overseas. We've had women killed in Desert Shield, Desert Storm. We had nearly 40,000 American women in a combat theater for the first time, and there's never been an honest evaluation of its effect. But one thing it did do, and politically correct attitudes, many officers coming up through the ranks have had to pay lip service to the interchangeability of men and women in the military at a time when we do not integrate football, baseball, basketball, or golf, or tennis. And I can tell you, as a combat veteran of the Vietnam War and some of the most vicious fighting in the Tet Offensive at Way City in 68, that combat is more demanding than football. There are no TV timeouts.
Well, it's amazing how they used the propaganda, the story of Jessica Lynch. Oh, the brave woman fighting there, firing to the last, out of ammunition, and then she didn't even have any bullets in her gun. It was all a propaganda program aimed at the minds of the American people, the docudrama they put up, all designed to get the American people to go along with this idea. I mean, she's a very nice girl, but she's not a great hero. There was a young man who saved her life. He was firing to keep the Iraqis away. But the entire story that they put out was all lies. But then what do they say? In war, the first casualty is the truth. But not only that, but they're actually using that to get the American people to believe that women should be out there fighting right along beside the men.
That's right. And the feminization had to precede the homosexualization. And I can tell you that there was a case called Rossiter versus Goldberg, decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1981. You might recall that late in his presidency, President Jimmy Carter ordered the draft registration. Remember, the draft ended in 1973. We went into the all-volunteer force, and in 1979, I believe, 78 or 79, what Carter ordered was the registration of 18-year-old men only. And the National Organization of Women, the usual suspects, ACLU and all these groups, went after that, they challenged that as a violation of equal protection of the law, that if there was going to be a draft, it had to include women, and that a male-only draft was unconstitutional. The U.S. Supreme Court, because the laws on the books at that time forbid the assignment of women into combat, the laws on the books, when Rossiter was decided, the Supreme Court deferred to those laws and the judgment of the American military leadership, even though when the case was decided, there were women at the service academies, women were still excluded from the combat arms. And so on that basis, they upheld male-only draft registration. But if you read, as I did, the National Organization of Women's brief in that case, they were calling for draft of men and women equally.
Well, I really believe that they will probably draft women this next time around. They're putting aside, you know, countless millions of dollars now to reinstitute the draft. They're not telling the American people that before the election because, you know, this would be very unpopular. And they don't want to shake up the people before the election. I'm sure that both Kerry and Bush will go for the draft, whoever wins in November. Because
well,
there's
be
not a dime's worth of difference between them.
There may be one of the reasons why this the hard line is being maintained on this very small military. We have a military, fighting military now that's about half of the military size we had in 1991 when George Herbert Walker Bush, Dick Cheney was Secretary of Defense, Norman Schwarzkopf was the commander, CENTCOM commander who led the troops, and we went in and pushed Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi army out of Kuwait. But we're about half of the fighting divisions and the Navy and squadrons and whatnot, and that, and they've insisted that we must be smaller, and the need is there. Create a crisis, a false crisis, and then give a false solution. Now, what they did with the women in the military was when they put that in there, guess what they created? They created a rape crisis and a sexual assault and sexual harassment crisis when they forced women and men into close quarters. The thing that was expected to happened. And now there are people studying and they're changing and transforming the service academies and the military to deal with bringing in politically correct folks to advise them on the what they call a sexual assault crisis. And the report of the committee on the 50th anniversary of the Uniform Code of Military Justice has now recommended, you're going to love this, Stan, you'll have an understanding that maybe your listeners won't, they've recommended the way to deal with the changes in military law is to establish a criminal sexual misconduct article similar to the ALI's Model Penal Code.
Now, what's the ALI?
The Model Penal Code is virtually a Kinsey document.
All right.
It is the transformation of American criminal law, the 52 laws that were targeted as early as 1923 for elimination, including abortion, sodomy, fornication, adultery, the crimes that protected marriage, women, and children, were eliminated. The Kinsey reports came out in 48, and they were cited in the American Law Institute's Model Penal Code, and you end up getting a transformation of state law that brought us to where we are, that we're now debating gay marriage, and they want to apply that same sort of non-criminal code to a pro-sex activity code to our armed forces.
Well, of course, Kinsey was financed by the Rockefeller Foundation. That was what they found out when they investigated it. And Kinsey was a pervert. Kinsey was really using science faulty science, phony science, made-up science, to change the mores of our society. It was his study that got Hugh Hefner's interest, and of course Hugh Hefner then set up Playboy, and it was this downward spiral. But of course we can give thanks to the Supreme Court of the United States, which then took away from the local community the ability to regulate pornography and just about everything else having to do with sexual immorality. Where in the Constitution does it say anything at all about sodomy, or the Supreme Court has the right to say it's perfectly legal? And it doesn't.
It's interesting that a colonel that I was working with during the 92-93 time frame, an Army colonel who was a lawyer, but he was a combat veteran of the Vietnam War, ended up having his career shortened by leaking the punitive homosexual separation record of fiscal years, a five-year study from 88 to 92 of 102 homosexual sodomy assault convictions, not just allegations, not just charges. They analyzed every case of homosexual sodomy in the Army in that period of time, and that resulted in a dismissal. 47% of the victims were children. 47%, and most of those were young boys. And what we're going to see is, if you look at what's happened in the Kinseyized, the sexualized, the what happened to the American Catholic Church post-Vatican II in the last Goodbye Good Men, and as that was homosexualized, that model is going to be applied to the military unless people be informed, unless they stand up, unless we get some brave men, some good, some decent men, virtuous men in Washington, D.C., both in the military, in the Pentagon, on Capitol Hill, involved. And if you'd like some more information, or you want to help this work go forward, be in touch with us at First Principles Press, P.O. Box 1136, Crestwood, Kentucky 40014. That's First Principles Press, Colonel Ron Ray, and that's P.O. Box 1136, Crestwood, Kentucky 40014, and we'll send you out letters of background information about some of the things you're hearing on this show, and it might be helpful to us to see that this material gets in the hands of people it needs to get in the hands of this summer, well before the election, so that we can be forearmed and forewarned and not be taken by surprise.
Now, do you have a website?
Yeah, there's some of this material. I think the brief we filed in Lawrence versus Texas is either on firstprinciplespress.org, firstprinciplespress.org, or you might look at rsvpamerica.org, and that will give you some good background. And the prayer case in VMI, the briefs are on there. Some of the material that I'm talking about right now is not on the website, but they'll know how to get in touch with us. rsvpamerica.org or firstprinciplespress.org. Let me say that that you just mentioned the virtue thing. I wanted to quote the great British statesman Edmund Burke and bring you right down to George Will. They were talking about virtue, and this was a man who favored letting the American independence go, and they understood that the Americans were right and the king and Parliament were wrong. A great man who understood the French Revolution and what the Americans were doing to gain their independence was a totally different circumstance. But he said, men are qualified for civil liberty in exact proportion to their disposition to put moral chains on their appetites. And even in our current time, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist George Will made the distinction between values and virtue. You know, we notice the word virtue has disappeared. But that's the first principle of the American military, that commanding officers and those in authority in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, National Guard have to show in themselves the highest degree of virtue. Well, this is what Will said about virtue. Unlike virtues, everyone now has a lot of values, as many as they choose. Well, Hitler had values, but George Washington had virtues. Who among those who knew him have ever spoken of George Washington's values? Values talk comes naturally in a non-judgmental age, an age judgmental primarily about the cardinal sin of anyone who is judgmental or has a standard. What's under threat is the exemplary conduct standard that has been maintained in the American military through thick and thin from 1775 down to the present time. I will say that there are some folks in the Pentagon who've done the right thing. These first principles were pointed out in a Liberty Day project that Secretary Rumsfeld put together on James Madison's birthday, which is March the 16th in 2003, and he established a website, and that link can be picked up on our website, so you can go, because he said that the oath that our men and women in the military take now, they don't understand it because they haven't been taught about the Declaration and the Constitution. They come in the military and they take an oath. They do not know what it means to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic.
Well, God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us. And again, that is First Principles Trust. And you would write to them, Post Office Box 1136. Crest, is it Crestwood?
Crestwood, Kentucky.
Right.
40014.
So give them, write to them, get the information, help them. What they're doing is vitally important, because if the military fails, then who will defend America? God bless you, Ron. Thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to do it. Glad to be with you, Stan. It's always a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts, entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I want to mention we carry Phonopoly. Phonopoly is a game designed to teach you and your children, your grandchildren, how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. And, of course, phonics is the basis of good reading. And if you don't know phonics, why, there's no wonder most of our young people can't spell or can't spell well. Most of the programs to actually teach children phonics are $300, $400, $500, $600, $800. This is $139.95. And in about 16 hours, you can get people to begin to read and read well. Now, it's a game. It's played just like Monopoly. It's not one game. It's actually five board games and two bonus games. And we believe it works well. I played it. I learned from it. I think you will as well. So if you'd like to learn more about Phonopoly, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then I want to mention that there is going to be a conspiracy conference. It's put together by a fellow named Brian Hall, and it's going to be held in Santa Clara on May 29th and May 30th. That's Memorial Day weekend, just about 6 weeks from now. I'm not going to be speaking, but there are going to be a lot of great speakers there. I will have a table, but Joyce Riley will be there, Len Horowitz, Rodney Stitch. Many of the people, Eric Schmitz, who we've had here as a guest. And if you'd like to know more, call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. Or go to their website at www.conspiracycon.com. That's conspiracycon, one word, .com. And it should be an interesting time. They're going to have some way-out speakers, a lot of great speakers. I think that you will learn a great deal, both of our side and the other side, by attending the Conspiracy Conference. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I just want to mention that we do carry the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence. In fact, we've kept it in print for the last 10 years or so. We think it's one of the most important books ever written. In fact, it's one of the five most important books in my library. foundations, their power and influence. When you find out that the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Carnegie Foundation were financing communism and socialism, they were pushing Marxism and attempting to destroy the love which every American should have for his way of life. Why were they doing that? Well, you need to read the book. It's important reading. And so Foundations, Their Power is available from Radio Liberty. You'll find out that it was the Rockefeller Foundation that was funding the Kinsey movement, intent upon destroying the moral fabric of our society. We still have copies of that video, The Gay Agenda. If you haven't seen it, you need to. You need to understand what homosexuality really involves. All you hear about is what nice people homosexuals are, and many of them are nice people, and many of them are very productive and intelligent and sensitive people, but they're involved in a deaf style, and if you care about them, you're going to tell them what they're doing is wrong. And I will tell you that the video, The Gay Agenda, is one of the most important videos ever put out. And everybody I know who was involved with that video, besides myself, was ultimately destroyed. Their lives were destroyed. It's a great tragedy what happens when you tell the truth about homosexuality. That's The Gay Agenda and Foundations, Their Power and Influence, both available from Radio Liberty. Then I want you to remember that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you would like to help us, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and you'll become part of our effort as we reach out 5 hours a day on shortwave, on radio stations, almost 60 every week carry our programs on the Internet, and certainly on regular radio AM stations like you're listening to today. And, of course, we're on the shortwave 4 hours every day. We're on the Internet 5 hours every day, and you can listen to us at RadioLiberty.com. That's www.RadioLiberty.com. And there's links there to other networks, to this network, and, of course, to the Radio Liberty Network, where you can hear our programs. And then you can listen to our archives, and you could spend probably 24 hours a day listening there, and you wouldn't get anything accomplished. But you'd begin to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle. Because behind this effort to homosexualize our military are dark and sinister spiritual forces that want to claim as many souls as they can for eternity. And the longer I live, the more convinced I am of the spiritual nature of this battle. You can't understand anything going on today. Why we're over in Iraq, unless you understand it is a prelude to World War III with the horror that's going to befall this country, unless our people turn back to God and repent for our sins, because there's no incidents in all history where a nation has turned against God and God has not eventually brought his judgment on that nation. For as Thomas Jefferson said so well, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and his justice cannot sleep forever. And so if you'd like to know more about our ministry, if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, which will tell you what happened at the secret meetings, the secret cabinet meetings in the White House in January and February of the year 2001, 8 to 9 months before the 9/11 attack, what were they talking about? Well, it's in our March newsletter, because one of the men who attended those meetings wrote a book and revealed what happened. Of course, he was demonized and marginalized and attacked by both sides of the media for daring to tell the truth, but he did, and you'll see it in my newsletter. We'll send you a free copy of the March newsletter. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But we ask you to pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, because we're on the front lines of this battle. Please pray for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Monday at the same time, we'll have some pre-recorded programs tomorrow. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.